This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by the Honorable Rick Crawford. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Arkansas, sits on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. He's on Intelligence and the House Ag Committee. It's great to see you again.
Good to be with you.
Okay, a lot going on here in D.C., but I think one of the things that's different is we're seeing D.C. start to reopen.
Yeah. Particularly, I think, we're coming off of Memorial Day break, and you can see a marked difference. Number one, fewer people wearing masks, and that's largely attributed to vaccinations. And I think just in general, I think people are ready to get back to normal and see the country fully reopened. And if the Capitol is fully reopened, that sends a signal to the rest of the country.
What about back home? How are things in the district last time you had a chance to go back?
Well, I spent a lot of time traveling the district over the last couple of weeks, and most recently down in the southeast part of the district where we've had some really unfortunate flooding. And in fact, we had in the span of 48 hours, we had about 22 inches of rain. And why that matters is because we were pretty much at lay-by for those crops that, at this point, home free. I had been down there almost just 2 weeks prior and seen the state of the crops there were maybe as good as I've ever seen before. And, the markets were looking good. This was really shaping up to be a good year for those farmers down there. Now it's pretty devastating. It's probably 100,000 acres of cropland underwater, homes damaged, businesses damaged. No loss of life, thank God. But I mean, it's a considerable amount of damage down there in southeast Arkansas.
Let's talk about a topic that seems to come up quite a bit when you and I talk, and that is Cuban trade. Mm-hmm. And I think each time we talk, we get a little better idea of where we are as far as either reopening, getting that trade reopened, mm-hmm. or maybe something that's been done to maybe tighten it up a little mm-hmm. more. Where are we as we sit here today?
Well, I think we're going to probably start to broach the subject again. And I think what we've seen over the last couple of years, most notably since Miguel Diaz-Canel decided to acknowledge Maduro's election victory, which most of the world did not. He aligned with some of the folks that probably did not mesh well with relationship with the United States, and that sort of took a lot of the luster off of this effort to try to normalize relationships with Cuba, and so it sort of stalled, quite frankly, and I think people probably looked at it as if they, myself included, I don't want to go down that road and alienate, my colleagues over this issue when Miguel Diaz-Canel, I had hoped that when he ascended to the position that he's in now, that he would be a reformer-type figure. That was the impression I got initially. I haven't had the opportunity to meet him, but there was an effort on their part to facilitate a meeting. And after the Maduro thing, I was kind of cooled on him a little bit. We're starting to see that turn. I think people need to understand that the Cuba trade is a highly charged political issue that presidents don't want to touch typically in their first term. And the reason is because Florida is a pivotal state, and the Cuban Americans in South Florida are very vocal. But I honestly think that, and I've seen polling over the years, and when I say over the years, I'm talking about probably the last, 5 or 6 years, that we're seeing a generational shift in the attitude toward our relationship with Cuba. And so now we have, millennial Cuban Americans asking the question, why can't I not go back and visit my grandmother or my grandfather in Cuba? Valid point. And we saw that President Obama took some steps to that end, but everything he did was executive action. And I think the mistake that he made was he assumed he needed, obviously, we had a Republican majority throughout most of his tenure, and he assumed that Republicans wouldn't support anything to do with changing the posture in Cuba. I think that was not a good assumption. So he did everything unilaterally through executive action. And of course, then Trump came in and sort of reflexively did away with all of that. So we've not been able to make progress in a meaningful way in that, because it's a back and forth. It's always a political football. And I think, quite frankly, on the ag front, we would be doing ourselves and the Cuban people a major favor by saying, let's start this process by selling U.S. ag products in Cuba. And if we can get there, I think we can take the next steps and build on that. There are those in Congress that propose a full-on repeal of the embargo and an immediate sort of reestablishment of a relationship with Cuba. I'm not rejecting that, but I think the best place to start is with ag.
Almost the point of taking those baby steps, and now I want to tie two of your committees together. We mentioned you're a member of the House Ag Committee and also the Intelligence Committee. Can you bring those two together when you're bringing legislation to the floor?
Well, absolutely. And on the Cuba front, that was one of the reasons why so many people checked out, because of the sonic attacks that took place on our diplomats in Cuba. And I was engaged in that issue because of my position on the Intelligence Committee and also because of the relationships that I had fostered over the years because of the ag stuff. So it kind of put me in a unique position. But I try to find a nexus between and among all my committee assignments, wherever they might be. So, you know, it's no coincidence that I introduced the AIM Act, the Ag Intelligence Measures Act, because it's been something that's been a concern to me since before I ever got in Congress, is that our food chain is vulnerable to foreign attack. And where I think we fall down here in the United States is mostly due to a failure of imagination. We can't imagine ever anybody ever doing that. But when we have gaps, weaknesses, and vulnerabilities, our adversaries are looking for those opportunities to exploit those. And the pandemic sort of brought those weaknesses, gaps, and vulnerabilities to the fore. So I thought, now is a good time, we've got people's attention, now's a good time to bring this intelligence piece to the floor, because it's important for folks to know that food security is national security, and if our food security, our food chain integrity is breached, we have a major vulnerability. We saw that happen. We saw it happen during the pandemic, because the pandemic itself created, in many cases, sick outs in mass, in for example, in processing plants that disrupted our food chain, our food supply. And we are a just-in-time supply chain. And so that left farmers and ranchers with really no safety valve. So there were an awful lot of euthanasia of livestock, and you know, you have very few options because you can't afford to continue to feed your livestock, and everything just feeds into this just-in-time supply chain. And so those disruptions manifest in the marketplace. Well, that was the warning shot. And then the JBS ransomware attack. And that really got people's attention. You know, it's no longer a what if. It is here and now, this happened. Now, that turned out not to be, you had essentially a 20% capacity compromised as a result, and just in the beef supply chain. But what if that were to happen again? What if it were to happen to other processors? What if it was not a ransomware attack? What if it was a pathogen introduced from a malign actor somehow or somewhere? And so we need to bring USDA into the intelligence community. Not because I don't want people to envision, you know, Jason Bourne in a cotton field or anything like that, but the subject matter expertise that resides in the USDA on things like ag security, food security, is really not present in the intelligence community. And so bringing that skill set and bringing that subject matter expertise into the intelligence community helps better inform the IC so they can better protect us. And so that's what this is about. It's a cooperative effort. And I don't think that ought to be limited to just the USDA, quite frankly. When we're continuing to see the ransomware attacks across a variety of industries, like the Colonial Pipeline, we need to think about how we take a whole-of-government approach to protect vital sectors of our economy. And quite frankly, I don't think it was an accident that our energy sector and our food sector were both attacked within weeks of each other.
It's always good to visit with you. You always bring some thought-provoking ideas to the table. We appreciate what you're doing. Wish you the best.
Thank you.
Again, it's the Honorable Rick Crawford representing the 1st Congressional District of Arkansas on today's Agribusiness Report.